This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal, medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. Now, here is where we talk with knowledgeable people about all things involved with struggling young people and the programs and people and resources that try to help them. So today, we're going to talk about, and the title is Answers Your Mother Never Gave You. And it's a rather provocative topic, and Mary Romero is my guest. Good afternoon, Mary. Glad to have you here.
Well, I'm so honored to have you back. Have me back, Lon. I'm excited about this show.
Okay, well, I am too, and it went well last time, so I think I can do a repeat performance, I hope. Anyway, yeah. Mary's a life coach, child advocate, and author of several books and pieces of literature in a variety of publications. She also maintains a practice helping victims of abuse and trauma, and we'll be talking about a book she co-authored called Teenage Girls, The Guide for Health, Wellness, and Self-Esteem. So, Mary, What made you want to be a part of this book? How did that come about?
Oh, my goodness, Lon. As you know, I am such an advocate for our youth of society today. And this had my name written all over it. I happen to be, if anyone has had the opportunity to read any of my writings, and I'm sure you know this as well, that when I have something to say or impart some information, I don't beat around the bush. I come straight to the point as kindly as possible. But
diplomacy is good.
Absolutely. But I don't sugarcoat things. And when it comes to a book like Teenage Girls and what parents need to do in order to help their daughters specifically succeed in life, I just had to be a part of this project.
Okay. Incidentally, I forgot to mention, we start, for any listeners out there, down on the, if you're on the website, in the lower right-hand corner is a general chat. Click on that, and it'll show some questions, some comments, and you're free to ask your questions, and we can watch for them and try to get them answered as we go. So good interaction there. We've had some good questions from some other people, so feel free to go ahead and ask questions, and if there's something that said that you have a question about or a comment, go ahead. Okay, so a large part of it is talking with girls about sensitive issues. Difficult topics. You know, the old, back in the old days, the birds and the bees was a conversation that parents needed to have, and they're all afraid of it. And dad would say, well, go talk to mom. Or
right.
Mom would say, well, go talk to dad, or something like that. It was just a very, very difficult discussion. So why is it so important to discuss these difficult topics with teens? Don't they sort of figure it out themselves?
Well, unfortunately, they think that they're figuring it out themselves, but more the problem is that they're getting incorrect information from people, their peers, mostly, who tell them their experiences. So therefore, they think that that is the way it is. Granted, I think for you and I, now I never was given a talk, you know, when I was growing up, and I wish I had. I was lucky enough to have a very close relationship with my grandparents. So I did listen and learn from them. But I think today's parents, it's not so much that they don't want to have the talk, but they aren't taking the time to have the talk. And it's not even just the talk. There are so many obstacles that our teens are facing today that we didn't as kids growing up. And parents need to be aware of all of those things, not just the intimacy issues.
You talked about parents don't take the time. It might be because the parents with two family incomes and so busy. There's been a lot of articles and talk about that. They're so busy doing some things, family doesn't even eat together. And, you know, everybody sort of passes like ships in the night a lot of the time. And so that might be one of the casualties of a very, very, very busy lifestyle we have.
I think it is very much, very much so. And I think... It's easier, maybe easier isn't the term. I think that when we do have to have the necessity for a dual income household, our children really do suffer because we are, you know, we can't focus on one thing 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. And so many parents are, you know, it's a dual income. They have very demanding jobs. They have to keep those demanding jobs because of the economy, and therefore the children kind of fall by the wayside. Something's got to give, and unfortunately, what's giving is the relationship between the parents and the children, or just the family unit as a whole.
Right, they're not communicating as much. Now, go to the chat here, and when we started off, the book that Mary is one of the co-authors of is Teenage Girls, The Guide for Health, Wellness, and Self-Esteem that we're going to be talking about. And she asks, is there a website that you like to tell people? Might as well get that taken care of.
Sure. They can Google me, Live Life Coaching with Mary Romero. I am on Wix. That's W-I-X. That is my website where all of my books can be purchased. Some of them are also on Amazon, and I also have a blog on Weebly, that's weebly.com, and that also is Live Life Coaching with Mary Romero. I give a lot of information on my blog, and I also tell my readers that if there are any questions that they have, if there's any information that they would like more on, feel free to contact me through any of those outlets, and I would be more than happy to help them out.
Okay, well, we'll cover that again as we wind up the show. But how do you talk to children, teens, young adults about, say, sex and intimacy? Because that's a hot button one. There's a lot of confusion and misinformation about.
Sure it is. You know, I have found over the years that humor tends to be a very good opener. Instead of coming to a child, young adult, teenager with this serious, okay, let's sit down, we have to have a talk now, they automatically tune you out. And one of the first things that I start with is if... Say I'm speaking to a young person, and I say, if you feel that you are old enough to do the act, then you need to be old enough and mature enough to discuss it. If you are not, then you have no business having an intimate or sexual relationship with anyone. Mm-hmm. So that tends to open the door. It may not be something that the child wants to hear, but you will get a response. You will either get, A, well, I am mature enough, Or B, what are you talking about? That, you know, maturity has nothing to do with sex. And didn't you have sex when you were a kid? You know, things like that. So that opens up a dialogue. The main purpose of that, using the humor to open up, is to start the dialogue. With no dialogue, there's not going to be any conversation. There's not going to be any exchange of information. You're not going to know what your child's doing. A lot of times, kids are going to be more than willing to tell you if you just ask.
Mm-hmm. You have to figure out how to ask. I think a key element in this whole thing is active listening. You can't communicate unless you're a parent, especially, is actively listening.
Yes, and I think a lot of, I've raised three daughters, and a lot of pseudo daughters, and I can say that being straightforward is the best way to go.
What do you mean straightforward?
I mean by saying if a child says, I'm old enough to make this decision, this is my body, and I can have sex if I want to. In answer to that, without seeming... It's important for us not to come across as being a authoritarian on sex or telling them what they can and cannot do. It's more important to tell them the benefits and consequences of those actions and the fact that decision-making skills that they exhibit should be in their best interests, and having an intimate relationship at a very young age is not in their best interest. And if we can go on to tell them, I mean, there's, you know, I could list make a list a mile long on why it's not in their best interest, and I'm sure you could too, Lon.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of times they just don't think of those things. We all know that the frontal lobe of decision making that is responsible for that does not truly mature until around the age of 24, if not older. So if we explain to them, it's not just about your body. It's not just about the feeling. It's about what you're thinking and the thought process behind it. And the fact, I need to really mention that males think very differently about sex and intimacy than females do, especially at a young age.
Oh yeah, and I think females are more vulnerable to the consequences.
Absolutely. I mean, they are the ones, if a pregnancy happens, to carry that child.
Mm-hmm.
Where a guy can, most of the time, you know, the guy said, you know, someone says to the male, man, you screwed up. What you gonna do? And he says, I don't know. And mm-hmm. off he goes. Or if his parents are involved, they may make him step up, which is not very often.
Not anymore.
No.
The old shotgun marriages was a term when I was a kid, but I haven't heard anybody seriously use that term in ages.
No, and you know, that marriage isn't, I have to agree, marriage is not always the answer.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're talking about young people here, where their thought process is going to change as they grow and mature. They're not going to think the same way today at 15 or 16 as they will at 25 or 26. Even.
Right. Well, and there's another thing here too. Guys seem to be more casual about it. The girls seem to put more into the relationship, and the guys might not see it as hardly a relationship at all. And that makes, I think, females very vulnerable.
Yes. And since you brought that up, while I was doing my research for this book, I thought it would be an excellent opportunity to get a male perspective to tell females what a guy is really thinking. So I did. And I had a young man named Tony, who I hold in high regard, 20-year-old young man. And I've known him for a couple of years now. He was very interested in this subject because he is not, quote unquote, like all the other guys out there. And he wants girls to know that just because a guy looks good and he's got the muscles and, you know, he's the big shot and, you know, he's on football team, he plays basketball.
Treats are nice.
Yeah. Does not make him the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, he's not the good guy. He's the one who's simply thinking, means to an end, I just want to have sex. He's not thinking, I'm in love with you, I want you to meet mom and dad, you know, I'm going to respect you. Respect is a real big thing. And his other point was, the relationships that you see on TV are not real. That's why it's on TV. You know,
it's called fiction.
Exactly.
For a reason.
Even if we're talking reality TV, that's not reality.
No.
They want ratings and they want people to watch. So they're going to put a lot of drama and things in there that just does not happen in everyday life. In everyday life, is this right? No. But is this real? Yes, it is. Men think differently than women when it comes to intimacy. And that goes from young age to adult.
Yeah, it's hardwired.
It is. It is. And young females need to learn this at a very young age so that they can prepare themselves mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. So that when they come across that guy that where they think he's the one, they need to notice red flags. I mean, you know, red flags go up all over the place, and I can see them. But there are just some people who just either A, refuse to see them, or just simply don't know what to look for.
Well, they're in the heat of the moment, the hormones are hopping. It's awfully hard to think.
Yes. And, so that comes along with that frontal lobe of acting it out just because we think it. Just because we think we want to do something doesn't mean we have to do it.
Yeah, the good old 60s mantra, if it feels good, do it. Oh boy, that's
right.
a deadly
we see
one.
How far that got them, right?
Oh, yeah. we have a few questions and comments. One, back to something you said earlier, do you feel girls and boys are growing up too fast nowadays?
I certainly do. I find it very sad that our society, because of all the technology and the things that are now commonplace on TV, which quite personally, I don't watch much TV, is sending our young people very bad messages about self-esteem and self-respect. And mm-hmm. I think pushing all the technology, sure, it's great for them to learn how to use a computer when they're young because that puts them ahead of the, you know, their peers, whatever.
Or at least up with their peers.
Right, right. Those things, yes, when it's done in an educational manner, that's fine. But when it's coming to the detriment of either their health or their emotional well-being, I think they are being exposed to far too much, far too quickly. And the problem is the parents are not putting a boundary up and saying, hey, you know what? Maybe it's a 12-year-old that says they want to go to the football game at a high school football game. I think without the parents there, they shouldn't be there. I don't know about you, but I know what happened in football games among kids when they're not sitting in the stands with mom and dad. A lot of things happen, and I'm just giving that as an example. There are other things, going skating at midnight, you know, doing the midnight to 2 or 3 a.m. skating thing. Even though it's for an 18 and under crowd, you can bet there are 18-year-olds there looking to hook up with 14-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it may be your or my my child that they're looking at. Parents really need to be aware that just because something is stated that it's for, you know, 14 to 18 or 14 to 16 does not mean something can't go wrong.
Yeah, well, you know, parents, part of the job of the parents is to protect the kids from themselves partly, and that's all part of it.
Right, and we can't use those outlets as babysitters for our children. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of parents do, and they give in because they've had a hard day. It is, you know, they've got, life is busy. We don't slow down long enough to look at our child, see how much they've grown, look at how they've grown out of their shoes, their pants, their, you know, as they're growing out of those things that we can physically see, we need to remember that they're actually growing out and into other things mentally and emotionally. So those are the things that we as parents need to pay more attention to and keep the lines of communication and dialogue open. Even if your child doesn't want to dialogue, I have a child that really doesn't want to talk about anything. I mean, let's get to the point and then move on. That's all well and good if they understand, but if the understanding is not there and it requires further dialogue, they will be dialoguing.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me ask
my household.
We have a couple questions on the chat section that let me put them together. Do the kids, do you find the kids are starting sex younger and younger? And let's tie into that. Do you feel the breakdown of values has played a big role on the way kids are today? That's assuming that the society and values are breaking down, which I don't know how many people would argue against that. But
no, I would venture to say not too many would argue against that, Lon.
Yeah. So do you find kids are starting sex earlier?
I do think they are. And I think that the mindset is, I'm going to be blunt here. So for any listeners who can't take the cold, hard truth, you might want to
tune off.
Both male and female, when they are starting to have intimacy at very young ages, and I'm talking 10, 11, 12 years old, they have no idea what they're doing. All they know is that one body part goes into another. Something happens and it's done. It has absolutely nothing to do with love or making sure that the person that you are being intimate with feels good, is being pleasured in the way that is pleasurable to them. In other words, it's not a mature love or intimate relationship. It is simply an act. And that's what's happening to our young people today, is it's simply an act to do, like going to the mall. Mm-hmm. Let's go have sex.
That's what you do.
You know, and what I discuss in this book is, if there is anything that really, really needs to be pushed, and this is for both a male and female, females, you need to know that you are respected and you are worthy of that respect. But you have to respect yourself first, or no one else is going to. What guy is going to respect you if you're just putting yourself out there for anybody?
I've seen a lot of movies, fictional movies, treating with that theme. Well, we have a question of how do you best explain sex and relationships to kids, and you started darting onto that. And let me roll that in with another question. How do you help parents become more comfortable with talking to their children about difficult issues?
You know, parents, if it's a dual, if we've got both husband and wife, a good idea would be to sit down with each other first and discuss with each other how they felt at that age. What was going through their mind? This is going to help them see where their child is today. Sometimes we as parents forget what it was like to be a kid, and forget our thought process during that time. What they need to go back and revisit that time in their life and know how they felt so that they can connect with their child today. Once they try that out on each other, it's much easier to go to your child. And it doesn't have to be a, you know, set time. You seize an opportunity. If your child says they want to, maybe it could be, you know, a lot of parents think in kindergarten, oh, my little girl has a little boyfriend in kindergarten, or vice versa. I have an issue with that. I don't know about other parents, but boyfriends and girlfriends in kindergarten may sound cute, but to the child, it's a reality. It's not a cuteness. And we have to relay that to our children and say, you know what? You have a nice friend. It's nice that you have a friend in kindergarten. He or she happens to be male or female. Doesn't mean we go kissing on them. I mean, you know, the one that I used to like to, I think this scared my daughters more than anything, was when I came straight down to saying, okay, you think you want to have sex with so-and-so. How about knowing the fact that he or she has already had sex with, I don't care if you name the names or you name off a number of people. They have to realize that they are then now having sex with those people as well. Germs get spread. And the big topic had become AIDS, but that is no longer the big topic. We're having gonorrhea. We're having all those other STDs coming back that we thought we had pretty much eliminated, because people are just going ahead and doing whatever it is they feel like they want to do without giving any thought to the repercussions of it.
Yeah, well, that's true, and that's happening. Well, it fits into what we're talking about, the values. Kids are doing things at younger and younger ages. We have a comment here and a question. Things aren't the same as they used to be, and it is hard to keep up with things. How do we adjust our teaching to the changing in times?
I think it's hard to keep up with, but you know what? It's hard for me to keep up with doing my hair sometimes. But we have to prioritize when it comes to our children. That is our responsibility as parents. This has to be like we talked about before with the bullying and other things, Lon, it has to be consistent. You can't just talk to your child once about a girlfriend or a boyfriend, or, you know, when I hear my child arguing with her boyfriend, I'm right there saying, hey, what's going on? What's up? Are you okay? Do you need help with something? Most of the time I get a no, don't look at me, because I don't want you to see me cry. But that opens the door for them to know that if they're having an issue with their significant other, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, they can come to you and say, hey, you know what? He or she said this or that to me and it hurt my feelings, and what am I supposed to do? I say, hey, if somebody hurts your feelings, you need to let them know they hurt your feelings. You have to talk to kids straight up, because they're going to talk straight up to you. And I'm not saying this in a way that you can't talk to them as a friend. You have to talk to them as a form of information, as a role model. And this goes along with role modeling the behaviors that we want to see in our children and instilling them into adulthood. And that goes for, you know, if you're very affectionate with your wife, Lon, around your children, there's a big difference between that and you seeing a young couple out on the street putting everything out there for everybody to see.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Right. You know, here's a good question that, again, from the chat. How do you notice if things are going bad? So what are the signs that you look for that you need to have the discussion or need to take some sort of intervention?
Okay, well, in my opinion, discussions need to start when they're very young, and they don't have to be on a specific topic. There are a lot of books out there on, you know, how to behave, books for kids about our private parts and what's good touching, what's bad touching, things like that. But when it comes to having a talk with our kids, we have to take any opportunity that is afforded to us. Say you notice your son or daughter looking at a girl and clearly he likes the way she looks or she likes the way he looks. I have been known to say to my daughters, hey, he's kind of cute, isn't he? And it makes them more comfortable to say, yeah, he is cute, Mom. And you know, that's as far as it has to go. Whereas children who do not have that kind of dialogue, in their mind, cute turns into, I want to get hooked up with this person and I want to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
So
part of my answer to that would be if something's going on and your gut turns and it's just, I think what a lot of parents do is if you can't prove it, they don't say anything. If something feels wrong, then assume maybe it is and get to the bottom of it rather than saying, well, I'm not going to say anything until I can prove that something's wrong, because parents can tie themselves in knots that way.
Absolutely. And you know, it doesn't, if you have a gut feeling about anything, and this could be anything in life, it is far better to get it out there and clear the air, so to speak, than to keep it inside and go, gosh, I wish I would have had said or done whatever, you know, at whatever time. Because you can always clear things up if there's a misunderstanding. You can't clear up a mistake that has already been made.
When
it comes to our children, we can't clear up a mistake that they've already made if we haven't approached that topic to begin with. All we can do is try to pick up the mess. And that happens sometimes too. I do see that someone here is asking, do parents think about things before they speak? Do any of us? Is my answer.
I tried when I had kids in the house.
The one thing that I did learn from my father very, very young was think before you speak. And I have instilled that in my own children. No, a lot of people do not think before they speak. Because A, there are emotional topics. B, they're more concerned about giving an answer than actually listening to the question. People get defensive. We're not doing, as you discussed, active listening. It's best for us as parents and for me especially, this is very hard to do because I'm a talker. I have to really, really be self-aware to keep my mouth shut until I have heard everything that my child has to say before I give my reply. Because we can jump to conclusions, you know, they can push little buttons in us. Isn't
jumping to conclusions considered a fitness exercise by some people?
I believe it is. And that's one that I tend not to try to do. That one kind of hurts sometimes.
It can show a real lack of trust in the kids if you leap to conclusions on that.
It can, and I'm very glad you brought up the trust issue, Lon. We have to, as parents, trust two things. A, our children will likely lie to us at some point about something. It's the nature of the beast.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have to trust in the fact that if we keep the dialogue open. Let them know, hey, you know, maybe they come in and you smell alcohol, but you're not sure. Well, that not sure needs to turn into, let me smell your breath. Why do I smell alcohol? Or, you know, you told me you were here, but you didn't text like you were supposed to. You're not home on time. I'm smelling something that I don't normally smell. Tell me what's up. You know, mine has always been an open door policy. If my children, when they got older, decided they were going to drink, because naturally they're going to make decisions that we don't agree with, instead of harming themselves, they can call me. I will come get them. No questions asked. I just want them safe and healthy. That does not mean that I condone their behaviors, because that will be addressed at a later time when they're in their right mind.
And you've calmed down.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. We do have to keep a clear head. And there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, you know what? I'm really angry with you right now. I'm very disappointed, and I can't talk to you about this right now. So you need to go to your room or go finish your homework or do whatever. But I will come back to you at some point, and we are going to discuss this, because this is not only unacceptable behavior, it's inappropriate and it's not good for you. And we're going to discuss why.
And then you have to make sure that you actually do it and don't forget.
Follow through. Absolutely.
They have some interesting questions here moving along. Can you think trust can be gotten back? We're talking about trust. Can you ever trust again once they break the rules? And what about confrontation? What road should you take with that? Because sometimes, I guess, I don't think you can avoid confrontation all the time.
No, you can't. Let me take the trust issue first, because that's kind of an easy one. Yes, I do believe the trust can be regained, both if it's the child breaking it or the adult. I have had this happen with my own, where I did something that my daughter did not approve of at the time, and nor does she to this day. We still do not see eye to eye on it. But what I apologized for was not my actions, but how I made her feel about the actions. We don't want to purposely hurt our children, and we don't particularly like confrontation either. I don't know any parent that is looking forward to arguing with their children after a full day of work. That's another thing that I discuss in this book, is that, you know, a lot of kids think, man, my parents always yelling at me. They always want me to do this. They want me to do that. They just love, you know, yelling at me and getting me to do this, that. No, we don't. If there's any children listening, we don't like to do that. We would much rather you behave as you're supposed to, and we don't have to say anything. That would be great. But that's just not realistic. It's called life and learning. And certainly the trust has to be, I think we talked about boundaries before during a show, Lon, that if those boundaries are crossed, that usually goes hand in hand with the trust. When those boundaries are regained and the child and or parent are working on that trust issue, it actually has to be laid out. How can I regain your trust? What is it that I have to do? And the same goes for married couples a lot of times. You know, a lot of things happen and trust is broken and people feel betrayed. Can that be fixed? Yes, I do believe it can be fixed, only if both individuals want it to be. They both have to work at it.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes a kid might be a little reluctant, and you have to keep at it.
Sure. And you know what? That's okay, because until they're out of your house, they got to follow your rules. So, you know, if they think that they're so independent and can take care of themselves, I say have at it. You go out into the world the way you came in. in my opinion, if you don't like to follow the rules at home, you're free to go make your own and make your own money and put the roof over your own head, which a lot of kids do have to learn the hard way. And that's why a lot of what I discuss and what we're talking about right now about having open dialogue is so those words don't need to be said ever.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask another question. In your experience, how often do you find kids having, and maybe adults, but kids especially, having a confusion between a want and a need?
Oh, yes. Yes, thank you. That is also one of the answers in my book is that and adults have this problem too, and I know you know this, Lon. The difference between a want and a need, there is a big difference. And I will share a story about a want and a need. Wants are things that is everything other than having to do with breathing, drinking, and staying alive. Those are necessities that we have to provide our children necessities, not only legally, but ethically and morally. Mm-hmm. We do not have to provide them the new tennis shoes, the $150 pair of jeans, you know, the new iPod or iPad or music, whatever thing has come out. Those are wants. What we have to teach our children is, no, you don't deserve everything that you want. That's not part of life. We have to earn those things, and we earn those things by following the boundaries and the rules that are set forth in any household. We earn those things by being the type of person that is acceptable, that our behavior is acceptable, that we are respectful in the home and to other people. If we can afford those wants, then by all means. I prefer to call them rewards, or saying, you know what, you helped me out by emptying the dishwasher today. How about we go for an ice cream? Those are rewards. Those aren't necessities. And the same goes for adults. There are the adults who are put down and sad every day because they don't get what they want. Well, you know, not everybody gets what they want. That's just the way it is.
Let me explain an example along that line of what I think sometime how I can get to the boundary or be pretty fuzzy. I saw a program one time. It had a mother and a daughter. And the issue was the mother was allowing the daughter to have her, there's a teenage daughter, to have her boyfriends over to have sex with. Mother's saying, well, it's better to, she feels it's better under the roof than going out, whatever. And they asked the daughter and said, well, I have needs. sex as a teenager is a want, definitely, but
that's
not
right.
A need.
Right. The only time, let's make this clear, Lon, and I'm sure you're on the same page as me. The only time it's a need is when you want to have children and you're planning that. Mm-hmm. Any other time it's a want. It's something we want to do. It's something we want to feel. And I'm going to go back to what we visited earlier about the feelings and the mindset behind sex and intimacy. Sex, here's another important part that our youth do not understand that sex does not only equal intercourse, nor does it equal love. Sex comes in many forms. It comes, there's oral sex, there's, now we have, kids trying to be sexual online, sending each other videos or messages or whatever as they want to do. What I would like to put out there to all parents is, your child is on the internet. Your child has a cell phone and your child is texting. You need to check that. And you need to make sure that your child has enough self-respect that they're not going to put themselves out there so that whoever's on the receiving end is going to put it out all over the internet for everybody and their cousin to see. Is that how they want to be portrayed in life? Mm-hmm. Period. How would you feel if your grandmother saw your, you know, your naked self all over the internet? Because I don't know about you, but my grandfather was 102 and he was still on the computer. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I'd feel too good if he happened to come across a picture of me doing something I shouldn't have been doing, or that I would be embarrassed or ashamed of. If it's something that you would be embarrassed or ashamed of, it shouldn't be put out there.
Okay, we have about 5 minutes left, and we have a question here that's sort of intriguing. I hadn't heard this, but maybe you have some comments about social services. These are state social services. And it says, social services in some places say you are neglecting kids when you don't have internet.
Well, okay.
I'm not sure if that's true or not, but if it is, well.
Well, whoever is asking this question, feel free to contact me after the show. That is not true. That is not neglect. Sure, you know what? In today's society and in our education, kids have to have access to the internet. But that doesn't mean it has to be at home. If you can't afford it, you can't afford it. There are libraries. There are lots of places that you can get on an internet that doesn't have to be at home. I've known a lot of kids who still do not have internet. Their parents don't use it.
I know a lot of adults that refuse to. They'll stay away from it like it's going to bite them.
Right. Yes. Change. You know, people get afraid of change when that's the one thing we can be sure of in life. No, not providing your child internet is not neglect. Beating your child and saying you can't get on the internet, that would be abuse and neglect.
Or not feeding them, or not shelter.
Absolutely.
Or no clothing, that's a neglect.
Right. You don't want, no clean clothes, you're locking them. I just did a piece on the young boy, I don't know if you heard in the news, that was beat to death, 8 years old, by his parents. After they tortured him, locked him in a closet, made him eat cat feces and his own vomit. And by the time the boy made it to the hospital, they found BB pellets embedded in his lungs and in his groin from the abuse. So the internet, that's way low on the priority list. I mean,
one comment about that internet thing. That was out of California and Tennessee. The comment about the internet. So,
okay.
Well, California, the left coast and all that, well, maybe some jurisdiction there might, some social worker might have gotten involved.
You know what, that may be the social worker, but if that person would like to contact me afterwards on my website or whichever, I will do some checking, and I will, if I don't have the exact answer, I will get it for them.
Okay, so we have 2 minutes. Be sure to contact, and you have 2 minutes to explain again how people can get a hold of you and your website or phone number if you want to use that, and a little bit about what you do.
Sure. I am a life coach, and I do specialize in conflict resolution as well as child and adult relationships. I do workshops, speaking engagements, and they're all interactive, and I can say that the kids love them all the way from little to college age. I can be contacted. If you have a pencil or pen, please write this down. My phone number is 804-651-4869. If I don't pick up your call right away, please leave me a message. I will get back to you. I do have a web page, Live Life Coaching with Mary Romero. You can reach me through there. I am also on LinkedIn, Mary Romero. You can reach me on there. That's Romero.
Okay. Well, we thank everybody for all their questions. And Mary, thank you very much. This has been good.
I thoroughly enjoyed myself, Lon, and I hope your listeners have gained some useful information that they can put into effect immediately with their kids when they get home from school today.
Okay. Well, this is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report, and we've been talking with Mary Romero, Answers Your Mother Never Gave You, and she's a life coach and a child advocate, and the book Teenage Girls, hopefully we gave some of the people out there the answers to some of the questions they're wondering about, or at least where to go, which might be Mary, where to go to get some of the answers. Thank you very much, and we'll be sure to be back next week, next Tuesday at noon Pacific time.
Thank you so much.